Hey, it's Citizen Cosmos. We're Surgent Online. We discover Cosmos by chatting with awesome people from various teams within the Cosmos ecosystem and the community. Join us if you're curious how dreams and ambitions become code.
I chose Blockchain Berkeley because they had a consulting arm. Back in 2017, there were a lot of white papers coming out, and most of them were like not really like relevant.
Before we rock it off into our next episode, we would like to share the latest news of this episode's sponsor, Cyber. The Cyber Congress DAO has recently launched its bootloader network for the superintelligence Bostrom. The network is stable and the first IBC connection has been established. More news on the activation of Cyber's gift to follow soon. To test Cyber, head straight to their app on cybe.ai.
Welcome to a new episode of Citizen Cosmos, everybody. And today we have Frederick Akunsa-Kilmer with us, who is the co-founder of Evmos. Very excited to have you, Federico. Hi.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me today. I'm really excited to talk with you about Evmos and the rest of the Cosmos ecosystem, too.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, it's just a couple months since Lisbon meetups and so on. So, yeah, sorry, Serge, go on.
No, it's okay. I was actually going to ask the same thing. And I was going to ask Federico to maybe share how was Lisbon for him and Cosmoverse. And did you guys get the attention or whatever your goals were during all those conferences, during the hackathons? Did you get attention? And I don't mean just like marketing attention. I mean, maybe development attention or other people like users. So if you can share that.
Yeah, I think during Lisbon, a lot of people were really excited about the project. Right now, also with the recent announcements and the recent partnership that we've been publishing every week with different infrastructure providers, like people are realizing like the potential of the project. During the hackathon itself, and also during entire Cosmoverse, like we got a lot of interest from developers. So we got a few really good projects. The two winners were like a wallet that directly integrates like the EVM, smart contracts, and MetaMask. So you can see ERC-20s and also Cosmos and IBC tokens. And the second place was a Balancer fork that it's going to be like one of the first natively built AMM directly built on Evmos. So we're really excited about all the support from the entire community and also from developers as well.
Maybe let's start with the very basics. Could you explain, like almost from the scratch, what is Evmos? Because it's not super easy to understand, but let's start from the very beginning. So what is Evmos? Could you explain, like in very short, non-technical terms, what is Evmos and why everybody like really talking about Evmos and what it's all about?
So Evmos is an application-specific blockchain that allows you to run smart contracts the same way as Ethereum. So it supports EVM, and you can use your ERC-20s directly on Evmos. But on top of that, it runs on Cosmos, which allows us to have like interoperability functionalities, especially in building like interoperability between the smart contracts and other blockchains. So the main goal here is to make smart contracts scalable and also scale the entire ecosystem by connecting chains that might not run a smart contract platform directly interact with smart contracts. So this brings a lot of different use cases in the entire ecosystem. So for example, like Sommelier or also like Region could interact directly with the smart contracts that are deployed on top of Evmos through their composability functionalities that we're enabling. So yeah, it's all about smart contract interoperability and fast finality. And that's our main selling point. And for that, we're going to be working a lot with developers, with infrastructure providers, and also with the entire community to make the economics of Evmos like really appealing for developers to start migrating and deploying their projects into Evmos.
Now you explained what Evmos is, which is basically a smart contract interoperability platform. What would you classify that as? I mean, it's a bridge between two layer one platforms, right? And by layer one, I mean like Cosmos and Ethereum, obviously. But I want to hear your opinion. How do you classify it? Where do you put that? Is it infrastructure? Is it a bridge? What is it?
I would consider Evmos as an L1. So it has its own validator secure set. It doesn't depend on Ethereum. So we don't need to roll up to Ethereum or any other EVM-based chain or other chain like Cosmos Hub or anything. So it's like fully sovereign chain. And it's a platform because it allows you to support or like to deploy the smart contracts and interact with the smart contracts that are directly deployed to the Atmos EVM. That's how we also allow bridges to be built on top of Atmos. For example, all the EVM bridges that are out there connecting Ethereum with different EVM chains like Polygon, Moonbeam, Moon River, Celo, etc., also to the other L2s, can be actually deployed using our EVM because we're fully EVM equivalent. And then that also comes with the IVC components, with the IVC interoperability components that allows developers to interact with all these different other blockchains and thus get more access to liquidity from different sources like Osmosis or the Cosmos Hub or any other blockchain in the Cosmos ecosystem. So it's truly like a fully interoperable sovereign smart contract platform that has its own validator set and it's fully governed by the stakeholders of the platform.
At the same time, it's like a protocol for other bridges as well, which kind of makes it a bit different, I guess, makes it interesting to see how it's going to develop. I've always been, and would love to hear your thoughts on that. We a couple of times discussed with some guests that we had on the show and just in general with people who've been into crypto for a long time and how many layers we can handle inside of blockchain. So let's say Evmos is an EVM on top of Cosmos. But you can build something, I guess, on Evmos, which is going to be another layer project, which internet layer, can you build another layer and another layer? Is it even possible what I'm talking about? Does it make sense? Do you think that people are going to be doing that? Or are they going to stop it like, okay, you have layer one, layer two, layer three, and that's it? Or are people going to build layer ones on top of layer threes kind of thing?
Well, that's not the scope of the project. It's more like enabling the full smart contract functionality with fast finality as well. So all the smart contracts or like all the transactions that involve the smart contracts are executed after the block is committed. So it's faster than Ethereum in terms of finality because it's running BFD. Also, the security guarantees are different from Ethereum. 1/3 versus 51% in order to perform an attack. So that's more like the trade-off between like BFD and Nakamoto consensus. The topic about building on top of like different layers is something that we are going to work with Celestia to support an optimized EVM for rollups as well. So having Celestia as a data availability layer, Evmos EVM optimized only for rollups to be deployed on top of Evmos, and then like you can roll up using a rollup. So it's kind of confusing, but that's something that we'll be working closely with the Celestia team next year. We recently announced something on our blog post that we'll be like collaborating with them and working on this solution. It's going to end up being the Evmos team working on where we're best at, which is EVM and smart contract interoperability components, and the Celestia team working on the data availability solution, which is what technically they're building, an Optiment as well, which is an optimistic tendermint for consensus.
Good that you mentioned it because I did have a question about it. And it sounds like what you guys are basically doing in collaboration with them. And if I put IBC in there as well, it kind of sounds like the Web3 OSI model kind of thing, an equivalent to that, where you have like a data availability layer, you have the smart contract layer, you have the communication layer. So is it kind of an OSI kind of like model kind of thing? Would you describe it as that?
Yeah, I think in the future, once Celestia is out, I think we won't see many other L1s being built. I think Celestia is effectively going to be the last layer one solution, which will provide data availability for all these other blockchains as well. It was going to be like the data availability layer. So like instead of the blockchains checking if the blocks are valid, it's going to result in the blockchains checking if the blocks are available or not on the Celestia data availability. And the chains themselves, instead of being L1s, will be like the settlement layer. So that's how I see the ecosystem evolving in a way, with Celestia being like the data availability for all of the new blockchains being built. What needs to be figured out as well is like a migration path for the existing blockchains. So the data is published on Celestia and migrated from like Tendermint consensus in the case of Cosmos to something that runs on top of Optiment, which is this optimistic Tendermint that Celestia is building.
Do you think that this is going to cause like the biggest really problem? I mean, that we see now as some Web3 projects that are trying to move data from Web2 to Web3. I'm not talking just about IPFS here. There are several others. I mean, some use crawlers or whatever, automized robots to crawl Wikipedia. they're uploaded into IPFS, and there are many different ways to kind of take data that we have in Web2 and upload it to Web3, but we're seeing that people are not really incentivized to do that. People are not really, how to say, well, of course, blockchains offer economic incentives, but is it still going to be a problem to get people to transfer, or developers rather, should I say, from existing blockchains to Celesta?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think the migration path is still not clear. I'm not an expert in terms of data availability. So this is definitely a topic that the Celestia team is working on, the migration path for existing blockchains. But what we're building with them is sort of like this collaboration for an optimized EVM that acts as a settlement layer. In terms of cost, this new chain that will act as a settlement layer will be directly connected with Evmos and use the Evmos token for security as well. I think that's the first step in terms of like using the same token for a potential migration, but we'll have to see how the technology evolves. Celestia is still early. They just announced their initial developer net, which is earlier than just a public testnet. So once we see that technology like publicly available, we'll be able to see how other projects are reacting or how like the challenges of migrating the existing solutions to Celestia would be.
I want to ask you a question. It's kind of obvious. Like, I mean, obviously the goal of any L1 is to get developers to build projects and users to use those projects. But do you have any specific targets at Evmos? I don't mean targets in terms of numbers or in terms of, I don't know, we want like 10 developers and $100 million market cap projects in 1 month. I mean, what kind of projects are you after? I mean, you named the hackathon, you had a wallet with the full EVM integration and a couple of more projects, but who are you going to try to attract? And well, how is a bit of a different story, I guess, but I'm more interested in the who.
Yeah, so we're trying to attract projects that want to leverage the interoperability functionality from Evmos and also like the token economics and basically getting a new user base. The Cosmos ecosystem, even though it has IBC interoperability between like the different blockchains in the ecosystem, it has generally been very isolated with the rest of the Ethereum on general like EVM ecosystem. So we want to be the main point of entry for all these different projects, like trying to get a new user base from the Cosmos community as well. I know Terra has a few bridges, also ThorChain and a few others, and now with the Gravity Bridge as well. But in general, we want to be the point of entry for all these different projects that want to expand and have an access to like the entire ecosystem as well. So that's what we're trying to go for. And our token economics is being built in terms of how can we create the right incentives for developers to migrate and to deploy their smart contracts on Evmos and thus expand their user base to the entire Cosmos ecosystem.
Talking about the tokenomics, I personally have been waiting for a while to see how you guys actually roll it out. And I guess the first part that you rolled out was the Rekt airdrop, right? Do you want to share a little bit about that? That's a bit wild. I love it. We all love it.
Yeah. When trying to design the airdrop, the first thing that we're discussing is how do we get as broad token distribution and how do we incentivize also Ethereum users to basically collaborate, start working on deploying their contracts to Evmos and for users and retail users in the Evmos, in the Ethereum ecosystem to also interact with contracts directly and that will be deployed on Evmos. So that's why we decided to have like different categories. The first category being like Cosmos ecosystem that involves Cosmos Hub and Osmosis users. So Cosmos Hub is going to be like stakers, and for Osmosis will be like stakers, LPs, and ION holders as well. So we're going to reward like a few different pools on Osmosis, ION holders, and also like staking on the Osmosis side. That's the first category. The second category was like Ethereum, because we want to bring and incentivize all these different users to start migrating. But we didn't want to just like take the token holders and like have a not fair distribution. The users that we care from Ethereum are the ones that are actually using Ethereum. And that's why we roll out with this concept of the gas drop. So the gas drop is basically you filter some of the most used applications. So we created a list of like the application that had like high TVL or high user, high volume, for example. And then we basically are rewarding users based on the amount of gas that they spent. And the whole narrative behind the wreck drop is that all these users are getting wrecked in terms of how much fees are they spending. So the more gas you spend, based also on the amount of tokens, the more gas you spend, and because the gas price for Ethereum is really high right now, you're getting some tokens back because of all the gas you spend on Ethereum. So that's kind of like the concept of the direct drop for Ethereum users. And also, because we wanted to follow this narrative and create like a lot of discussion in the ecosystem, we wanted to also like reward victims for different like projects that have been hacked in the ecosystem. So we collected the addresses from several hacks and vulnerabilities in the Ethereum ecosystem. And we're rewarding like the victims of those projects. So effectively, if you've been a victim of an attack of the project that we mentioned in the rec drop announcement, you'll be eligible for tokens as well. So that's kind of like the whole concept of the narrative behind the rec drop, the amount of fees that you spend on Ethereum, the vulnerabilities, including MEV, also like on the rec section. And for Cosmos, it's just like the amount of gas the token price that has decreased significantly over the past few months as well.
Could you share any more details about the tokenomics? If you want, of course. Apart from the drop, okay, but I know it's pushing, you don't have to. So, but if you can, it would be nice to hear.
So we thought about Evmos itself and any smart contract platform to be sort of like a two-way marketplace in which developers and users meet together. For example, like developers deploy their decentralized applications and users interact with these dApps using a UI or so. Uniswap, you can think all these like apps on Ethereum. And for the token economics, we want to reward, like incentivize the both sides of the marketplace so that developers and users are actually incentivized to use the applications and the users for interacting with these applications. So that's kind of like the way we're thinking about it. We'll probably like be releasing like more details about the token economics design, but that's how we're looking at it right now. And the other thing that I can mention is like we're another column of the token economics that we're designing right now is like also adding fee rebates for IVC relayers. So relayers that transfer all these packets between like two connecting chains, in this case, like Evmos and the Cosmos Hub or Evmos and Osmosis, etc., will be eligible for like fee rebates. This will be a parameter in the chain. So like, depending on the amount of fees. And of course, like once a new fee model for IVC transfers will be out, they will also be gaining fees and also getting their rebates for the transactions that they spend the most resources for, which are updating the clients, the live clients on each of the connecting chains and IVC transfers.
That's really great news that you guys are thinking about relayers. Because there's been a lot of problems recently and people have started to talk about it, speak up. Everybody who's launching relay is saying, well, it costs a hell of a lot of money. It's not incentivized anywhere at all. And it's a bit of like strange how people are expected to hold onto that infrastructure. As an infrastructure provider, we're not a relayer, but we would like to be sometimes. We're a validator. And maybe would like to in the future to do relaying as well. And it's great to see that projects have started to think about it. So it's really cool that you guys did it. Is there any project out there in the blockchain space that you would say that the tokenomics design is something you think is a good example of a tokenomics design? Not something you guys copied into Evmos or took ideas from or whatever, of course, always like that. But a project that you would say, okay, guys, I would suggest to check that out in terms of tokenomics.
I think one of these token economics designs was definitely like Osmosis. We took that as a basis for our airdrop, but we wanted to expand it. We didn't really like the quadratic voting mechanism that they had, because in a way it also, while it capped the whales in the Atom community, it wasn't like something that you could say was like fairly distributed. So we went instead for more like a pro rata approach in which you have like different things that you need to comply with. Some of them are like give you points. Those points have different weights. For example, like if you stake versus if you like LP to one pool, like they might have like different weights. And those points assigned to each of these tasks will be like pro rata to the amount of tokens that each category will have. So for example, the more points you get, that will be pro rata to the total amount of points of all the users. So yeah, we'll like distribute everything pro rata. In that way, you're basically incentivizing for usage and not for like large token holders or large LP providers. That's kind of like the main difference. I think it's more fair for users that may not have large amount of LP shares or tokens. So we're basically distributing everything pro rata based on these actions.
I have another strange tokenomics question. I don't know if you've been following the whole bribery, let's call them wars, with Terra, Ethereum and all that, and the bridges, like giving incentivized and stable coins to bridges. So my question is, FMOS is going to be that, I think so, and we all think so, I guess, like a place where a lot of money, well, DeFi is going to enter into Cosmos and some DeFi going to go out to Ethereum from Cosmos. And probably because it has ABC, we're going to see all the other projects like Terra and everybody else joining as well. Do you think that we will get in FMOS to that bribery wars, and will it be good or bad? I mean, the word bribery is kind of like a bit loud, of course. And you could just say incentivization, but like, you know, when project comes and gives a specific incentivization to a bridge just to incentivize it and to get people to use it more, do you think it's a problem or is it a loophole? Is it not? I mean, what do you think in general about all that?
So I have two thoughts about this. One is like these different bridges have different layers of different degrees of security. So it's not the same talking about like a single multi-secure bridge than another bridge that has optimistic mechanism that you can claim back in case like there's something happening. So there's like a lot of things in terms of like the user can choose the different bridges based on the security and the risk profile that they have. So that's one thing. So I think incentivizing different users, I guess it will come down to the end user, to the preferences that they have. And also in terms of the incentives, so bridges need some liquidity to be like fully operational. I don't think that's necessarily bad, because otherwise if you don't have the liquidity there, then there's no really like enough bridging mechanism. So like if one side of the bridge is like not really have enough liquidity, then you won't be able to transfer. In terms of the incentives, I would say it's not necessarily bad for the ecosystem, and in the end, it will be resolved by like which has the most functionality rather than necessarily like incentives. There are a lot of attack scenarios that also can happen through incentives. So like if you're incentivizing enough one bridge and then it has a security vulnerability, or like you could, for example, start bridging all these tokens and then like through bridge farming, you can get a lot of tokens. So that's something like all these chains should be like really aware before incentivizing the different bridges. So yeah, that's kind of like my thought in terms of user security and risk profiles and incentives being another like attack surface for the smart contract platforms and in general for the bridges.
The greatest thing about attacks is that the best ones come from where you don't expect them, only when the platform gets really used. And then somebody's like, that's it. And I mean, like with a lot of stuff like MEV and stuff like that, right? All came out much later than with straight. When the whole, I mean, it kind of grew with the industry, right? Most of the attack vectors. And I hope that you guys manage to deal with whatever comes. Anna, do you have any more questions about FMOS? I want to move to a couple of more other questions, but maybe you do as well.
Not about FMOS. That excites me more. It's a story of how FMOS was burned like a project. So could you tell a little bit how you get to the idea that, okay, that virtual machine on Cosmos is going to be the interesting thing?
FMOS itself was born from the concept of this old project called Ethermint. Ethermint was R&D project that started in late 2016, even before Cosmos Hub and the Cosmos SDK was being built. So the whole concept was like proving that you can build the EVM on top of Tendermint so that you can run smart contracts using fast finality. Then this project was migrated to Cosmos and there were a few teams like working on it, but no one gave it enough resources or support from a community point of standpoint. So once these like multiple parties decided like to deprioritize the project, we saw the opportunity of not only like having just an EVM on Cosmos, but also like expanding the scope of the project to be like a fully interoperable smart contract platform in which you can build all these interesting economic models for smart contracts to be deployed. The initial scope of Ethermint was expanded in a way that wasn't there before. And that's ultimately what we want to do, is create a platform in which we support like interoperability and interchain composability so that other smart contract platforms can also interact with smart contracts deployed on Evmos and, for example, like the Cosmos Hub. Even though it doesn't have a smart contract environment like Cosmos Wasm, can still like interact with the smart contracts that are deployed on Evmos. So like it's all about like interchain composability and scalability for smart contracts as well, and giving them access to liquidity. And how the project started initially was more or less when I stopped my consulting for Chainsafe after they decided not to continue with the project. I reached out to my co-founders, Akash and Nick, who I was like friends since like Blockchain Berkeley. Blockchain Berkeley was this blockchain community student organization from UC Berkeley, where like a lot of projects in the Cosmos ecosystem and also from Ethereum ecosystem were founded by some of the alumni. Sunny was also part of Blockchain Berkeley as well, with Dave, also co-founder from Osmosis. And the whole IVC team is also the core team, like 2/3 of the core team was also part of Blockchain Berkeley. One of the main reasons why we have IVC today and also Osmosis, and my co-founders were active in the Cosmos ecosystem and in general like the blockchain ecosystem, and they were like really excited to start this journey together.
I remember we had an episode with Chainsafe. It was, I believe, 2020, right, Anna?
Yeah, it was like almost a year ago.
Yeah, if not even longer. And of course, the like if you take now those two episodes, I guess it's a big difference between what was planned and how it come. But it was started with Aragon Chain, right? I mean, that was the whole like kind of like how it probably didn't start with Aragon Chain for you, but it started with Aragon Chain for the people who heard about it yet. And is Chainsafe at all involved still in Evmos or no?
No, they're not involved. They had other priorities with different ecosystems as well. They started working on other projects. So they haven't supported the project since they left in early 2021, so like around January. After Aragon Chain pulled the plug on the project and they decided not to go with Aragon Chain and instead rely on other solutions, like, for example, the XDAI chain, etc. Yeah, they decided like not to continue working on it, and also because they didn't have enough resources to spend on the project. That was the main reason, I would say.
Now it's Gnosis Chain, right? It's a new
thing. The XDAI just rebranded to Gnosis Chain.
It's an interesting rebrand.
I'm really interested about Berkeley Alumni Group. Could you tell us a little bit about that group, about how that happened? Because I guess at that days, it wasn't like so mainstream as it is now. So why you decided to join the group? Why you personally be so interested in blockchain industry at that time?
Yeah, I was in Berkeley for only a semester. I was an exchange student. I studied computer science and industrial engineering in Chile. So when I went to Berkeley, I was working on different like machine learning and AI projects. And when I went to Berkeley initially, like I realized like everyone was working on machine learning and AI. So there was a lot of demand, but also a lot of offer from computer science scientists and like engineers in general. So I wanted to join and learn a new technology that wasn't like so mainstream, that I could get early and also get my career started as well. So I chose Blockchain Berkeley because they had a consulting arm, like you could work with real companies that were interested in doing projects with blockchain. So I was involved early on with a project with Qualcomm that they wanted to build like a private blockchain solution with their different providers and suppliers. But the other thing that I found really interesting about Blockchain Berkeley is they also have like an R&D research and also like an education arm, which is really useful to get started with all the blockchain lingo and everything technical about blockchain. So I started my career like learning everything about blockchain with Blockchain in Berkeley. My co-founder Akash is one of the co-founders of Blockchain in Berkeley. So my two co-founders were the ones that actually taught me how to write Solidity smart contracts early on, because they were like the teachers of these Blockchain for Developers course at UC Berkeley. So they have like a lot of experience in terms of smart contracts and blockchain in general. It was nice to like reunite together and create this project. They've been working on multiple startups in the space and also like with two like traditional tech. So they have like a lot of experience in that side as well. And I think like Blockchain in Berkeley has been foundational in for Cosmos ecosystem, because Tendermint had an office in Berkeley. So we used to hang out a lot with Jay Kwan and also like the entire Berkeley team there. Adrian, that is now working for Anoma, was also usually there. And the entire like Tendermint and Cosmos ecosystem was heavily involved by the early Blockchain Berkeley alumni as well.
I have a slightly controversial question about that, I guess. The answer could be both ways. I see pros and cons, but again, we're more interested in your opinion. Do you think it's an issue for decentralization in terms of whatever you believe that specter is between centralization and decentralization, where a large group of people, and again, this is a controversial devil's advocate question, comes from one, let's say, group where they know each other and they could have bigger stakes or whatever? I guess you understand where the question is going. Do you think that it's bad for decentralization of a future project if it's such an open project and a big project, where a lot of people that have been near the foundation of that project know each other and could potentially in the future, I don't know, communicate with each other or found a vector of attack or whatever? I mean, again, this is controversial, a devil's advocate question, so feel free to answer it or not to answer it, of course.
I can speak more about that because like we were just students. None of us participated in the ICO that were involved in the ecosystem. I joined as an intern, so I didn't have access to any of the token sales or any of the projects. I remember while being still with Blockchain Berkeley, I used to read the IBC and Cosmos paper as well, like on the whole governance procedures and all that, how we used to have like different white paper sessions. And really what motivated us was like building these technologies. In terms of decentralization, like I guess, and it's still the case, like not many developers were available for different projects. So I guess for Cosmos and Tendermint, having like this pool of like young motivated students that were able to like also contribute a lot back to the project was really beneficial for the early stage of the project, because literally like all of us knew what blockchain meant, both at a high level and also from a technical perspective. We were like doing all these white paper circles like every week, where we would read a new white paper that came and also analyze it from like a point of technical perspective. It makes sense or not. And back in 2017, there were a lot of white papers coming out and most of them were like not really like relevant. But I guess it was very beneficial in terms of having this pool of engineers like early on for the ecosystem.
I guess it is a great thing in terms of, I think AZ16, they were the first to talk about it publicly. Not the first, probably, but one of the biggest like companies who said, well, the indeed specter of centralization, decentralization, it's actually a really good thing where the project starts from that centralized ball, I guess, and slowly evolves and decentralizes into more and more and more, reaches out more people and more communities. And I guess this is a perfect example of how this is evolving right now. And Anna, again, sorry, still in for another question.
I'm just want to ask, do you still spend some time for R&D, or you're so involved into the project building and development that you don't have time for that?
Oh, definitely need more time to do more R&D. I'm usually like up to date with everything that's going on in the Cosmos ecosystem, but it's really hard to catch up with all these different blockchains that are being developed right now. I don't have much context about what's going on with Near or Solana, for example, because I'm not heavily involved. So I try to focus my attention mostly like on the Ethereum/EVM ecosystem, on the Cosmos ecosystem, because that's where we can provide value. My co-founders have been also involved in different blockchains and different communities, so they know a lot about like all these other blockchains. So as long as each of us like can provide value from different perspectives, I think that's really relevant for the project in terms of R&D.
Do you think you guys are going to connect to other layer ones? I mean, not via other bridges, but in terms of how you're right now building that connection between, I guess, the two biggest ecosystems today in blockchain?
I guess in the future, we'll see the two main platforms or like smart contract platforms will be like EVM and WASM. And I would expect every major layer one to have a blockchain or a runtime that supports EVM and also WASM. And we're seeing that already. EVM is widely supported by most of the L1s. So you can think of like Celo, also in the Polkadot ecosystem, there are like EVM chains, like also in Solana, Near, etc. So we'll be indirectly connecting to this ecosystem through the EVM bridges. So yeah, also Avalanche. So all these different blockchains will be like also compatible, and Evmos will be the point of entry to the different EVM bridges to like enter the entire Cosmos ecosystem.
Nice. And I guess shared security as well will help you to attract more in the Cosmos ecosystem and more validators as well, right? I mean, there's a lot of talk about it recently.
Yeah, the next year will be like focusing also like on shared security, and we plan to make Evmos one EVM chain that is like a hub for the other EVM application specific chains that will spun up and then in the entire Cosmos ecosystem.
It's been a really nice description in my opinion. The last question, we kind of ask people who we think that it's nice to learn from people who are founders and people who build Web3 in general, not necessarily founders of projects, but people who shape the future industry, what motivates them? So the question to you is maybe you could share a couple of motivational things, and it could be anything. It could be books, activities, music, GitHub pages that motivate you in your daily life to build, well, these days it's Evmos, but maybe in the future it will be more projects, we hope. So what motivates you?
What motivates me is like building the base infrastructure layer for all these different projects to be built in. Right now, blockchain is mostly focusing on finance, and we're only seeing a nascent NFT ecosystem. But in the future, I think like NFTs will be huge in terms of like adoption and like connecting the real world with the blockchain, like increasing transparency and solving coordination problem within the different nations and communities. My motivation in general is to build this infrastructure layer. Right now, no one has built any smart contract that is fully like interoperable. So that was like my main core when I decided to build Evmos. So build the base infrastructure layer and build the right incentives so that people like will actually benefit from the interoperability of smart contracts. Use cases that we don't even know that will exist right now will be possible through this infrastructure that will be set in place through Evmos and the entire blockchain ecosystem as well. The main point here is that we want to create all this infrastructure for developers and users to interact with in the future.
I'm going to still carry on the question a little bit for you to answer a little bit more. But what helps you in your daily life not to set off your goal? Like, I mean, that's a technology is what motivates you. I loved it. But do you listen to a song every morning that you wake up and go, okay, now I listen to it. Now I can go and build. Or do you read something? Do you meditate? Do you walk the dog? I don't know, like something like that that gets you in the mood to build the bridge.
I try to set some time for myself in the morning. I try to meditate or do sports. I think like balancing your life, especially when you're in a high stress job, is very relevant, because if you're not taking care of yourself, then you're not taking care of your company and your employees as well, and also your entire community. So I think it's really important to be humble and like be aware and mindful of the things that you're doing and at all times, like being present, and instead of like throwing bullshit over there in Twitter or whatever and starting like drama fights with whatever other projects out there. That's my mindset, at least in terms of interacting with the community and like taking care of myself and like be mindful of the needs of employees and community and listen, just listen to the others.
Nice. I love it. Well, I mean, when you said bullshit on crypto Twitter, I was going to say, but Sarah, I mean, isn't that the essence of blockchain? But okay.
I think a lot of people like only care about like making money in this ecosystem. Unfortunately, blockchain is a perfect technology for doing that, because then it's like technology plus finance. But at the same time, like we're building like foundational infrastructure, and that often is not really like appreciated from all these different like people that are just caring about like the money or like how much interest they can get over there or like how high can this or how expensive their NFT is. And I think the base layer infrastructure is usually what I care the most about and like what it would enable to like create all these interesting applications for users that really need them the most.
You're absolutely right, because I mean, just before we had this recording, like an hour before it, I was invited to a round table to speak about some things. And there were people, there was a couple of guys from YouTube, there was somebody from Holochain, they're still around apparently. And there was a couple of more projects. And after 45 minutes, I had to log off because, I mean, the conversation was just about price and NFTs. And I said, guys, I'm sorry, it's a bit boring. I'm going to go. I mean, people talk about prices, NFTs, and how to make more money with NFTs. And rather than talking about things like data availability layers, rather than talking about IBC, rather than talking about, like you said, the future foundation for infrastructure. And God knows how, or let's say Satoshi knows, how long will these systems be around for? I don't know how many, maybe thousands of years or maybe more. We don't know that. So I absolutely agree with you. Spot on.
Yeah, a lot of people and investors in general, like when they join your community channels, are like usually like asking like when the token is going to be available or how can they like buy the token instead of learning more about the project or asking the right questions. But I think like it's okay, like we'll be slowly transitioning and it's our job as well to like educate or like give more resources to people to learn and like how to interact and like show them like what is actually being built on top of our product. Like all the different products and all these different interesting applications that are built on top that are not actually like just money-making applications, but are actually benefiting and like solving coordination problems or actually like giving access to finance to people that weren't, that didn't have access before.
I think this is a great note to finish up because we like to think of ourselves, that's what we do, try to give people a resource to connect to people like you who build that infrastructure and to learn from, well, if they choose to, of course, from the projects, the infrastructure, that there are other values apart from just earning money. And like, let's hope that's going to be the narrative, like you say, in years to come. Federico, thank you very, very, very much for coming. I know you guys are super busy with everything right now, with the testnet and with designing the rest of the tokenomics and everything else. Let's see. We hope that you guys are going to launch the sooner, the better. But of course, don't hurry. Thank you very much, everybody. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.